Welcome, everybody, to Dine with the Divine. My name is Ashley. I'm your host. And together, we're going to be exploring the magical, the mystical, and everything in between. So on today's episode, we're going to be talking a lot about Georgia, the country, not the state, and a very lucky prince. I hope everyone's had a wonderful week. And if not, I hope it gets better soon. Today, we have a fantastic guest, Anna Antadze. Anna is a nomadic Georgian artist, singer, cultural worker, and ancestral lineage healing practitioner. Anna's people come from various areas of the Caucasian Georgia. Anna's art, healing services, and cultural healing projects are dedicated to the remembrance of ancient wisdom and ancestral treasures. Anna enjoys bringing her voice and visibility to old wise powers that have been concealed by colonists and imperialistic historical processes. Anna, how are you today?
I'm good. Thank you, Ashley, for having me. I love the name, Dine with the Divine. Divinely.
I'm glad you like it. That's awesome. So I love to ask everybody, how did you start on, you do so many different things. So we'll talk about this first. How did you start on your path to learning more about like your land and your the ancestral processes of your land?
I guess it starts like very early on because I'm a dually raised culturally. I was just 3 years old as we moved away from Georgia. Mm-hmm. And I was then raised for 10 years in Austria. And then we went back to Georgia again. So I had this kind of, I never really felt fully Georgian at that time, and neither did I feel Austrian. Mm-hmm. And so it was this feeling of estrangement and at the same time feeling a huge welcoming from the land. But at that time, I wasn't really understanding what this welcoming is. Mm-hmm. Psychologically, it was like feeling like the outsider, like the stranger there, as I was again starting to go to school as we were back there. And because of this kind of a bit of aloof and at the same time loving my country in a weird way, mm-hmm. not in a weird way, but in a way just at that point, I wouldn't really have understood it because there were really a lot of troubles, like inherited troubles, unresolved troubles from the Soviet era, which broke down just in the 90s. Then we had in Georgia civil war. And as we went back, it was early 2000s. And the first couple of years I witnessed also, there would have been like electricity. How do you call it when the light goes out and there is no electricity?
Oh, like blackouts?
Yeah, blackouts for like ever for 2 years, and there would be only rarely like electricity. So it was really harsh. And not only that, also like for me, also interpersonally, but also a lot of love there, and especially from the land and from like old grandmothers. I always loved grandmothers.
Old women in any country seem to always make you feel good, right?
My mother would tell me, like, as I was really small, if I saw a grandmother, I would like run to this grandmother and hug her. So I loved Georgian grandmothers especially because they would hug me back. So in the school years, then I had like a lot of time to be a bit more from this, like, okay, the dynamics, like what is happening here? There's so thick air in the school, and it's easier when you don't feel completely in the thing to start to marvel about some dynamics. And I had already that feeling from there on in school that it was not subjective psychological things, but it was more, and it was a collective thing. More and more I was interested to understand like the historical dynamics and inheritances and what led to this very big political and sociological, harsh dynamics and sentences that people were not able to really name.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. About Georgian culture First of all, it's so cool. Like, just even, I can't wait to talk more about this, but I think there's just so many very, like, neat things about it. And it sucks that you're talking about because of different things happen, especially because of, like, the former USSR. And there's a lot of these really awesome practices were so suppressed. And they're meant, right, to keep everybody down. That's why these powers do that, right? Because once they try to disconnect you from your culture, it's easier to control. I'm not a dictator, so I guess, like, it makes sense. That's probably a good example. But when I see some of the different cultural things, like, I was listening to some polyphonic singing, and I was listening to so watching some of the dancing, which I have to talk about for at least 3 hours. I'm like, how could anybody want to suppress this? It's so cool. It's just like every culture, it just has such unique dynamics. I'm like, how could anybody not want to see this? This is beautiful. So, yeah. And I think all that political stuff, when it comes in and another place is trying to oppress people, it does give a big disconnect to everybody. So no matter what's going on, like you said, you felt like a thickness and like, why is the community feeling like this? Because it's like, yeah, you're all being forced to disconnect from something that you know in your bones. And that's just rude and mean. And nobody's saying that. Don't be a dictator, everybody. That's mean.
I know. Please don't. Exactly. So it is such a harsh reality of being raised in a space where, so let me say first about in a broader term, in Georgia's history, throughout the history, culturally. Oh, sorry for that. I thought I had put it off. So throughout the history, the Georgian culture has already this pattern from very early on to have been colonized by and imperialized from one big empire after the other. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons they say is because it's geographically in a place where it's tiny. Georgia is tiny, not big. I think it's like around 7 feet quadrat kilometers or something like that. So around the size of Austria. And it was never really big. There's an exception in the 13th century or so, but otherwise it's small. And around Georgia, there were these huge imperias, and like Ottoman imperias or Seljuk imperias or Arabic imperias. And then there were also the Mongol invasions, all these huge imperias. And then also the Russian Empire and then the USSR. Yeah, so it had this repeated history, one after another. So it in the Georgian culture, and on the other hand, you also have 2 points from a side. You get then your character through your history as well. Mm-hmm. So Georgians are very versatile, and it's partially also due to having been mingled with so many different cultures. And at the same time, having somehow miraculously that very ancient culture, regardless of having been so tiny and having been seized over for multiple times. That's very interesting as well, how the identity had been kept still. But coming back to the Soviet era, that was then really profound, as you were saying, exactly. Like, there were really very specific attempts to unroot the people. And there they started the very big, like, in the regions where the people had the most kept ancestral knowledge and were, like, very much connected to the place and the land. And that's the area where I also researched in Petsureti, this project of mine, the Kadagi project. They, because of that reason, to unroot them and to make an amnesia, culture and amnesia, they displaced lots of people from there to other places in Georgia. And the reason was they explicitly would say that every land shall be used and be in good usage, but it was definitely also to make people cut away from their roots. When you don't remember much about yours, then it's so much easier to be becoming part of the program of what the Soviet Union wanted to become, the new human and all that gigantic.
That was dumb. We don't like it.
No, it was not. We didn't like it either.
Yeah, I'm sure. I've read about it. Sounds pretty awful. So my next question for you is your art and your healing. When did that start for you? When did you get started with all of that?
With the healing, with ancestral lineage healing, it started actually for me personally, just conscious or obvious or direct encounter with my ancestors like that in spirit, started actually around COVID.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So my teacher, Daniel Four, who founded the organization Ancestral Medicine, had then at that time, he offered a free public ritual that was named Bring Out Your Dead. I love the name.
Yes. I like it.
And it was just some time before that I had purchased his book and I really liked it. I was always interested in my ancestors and history and heritage and so forth, but I had never encountered it in this specific approach to contact them in spirit, really directly. So that was his teaching. And at that time in COVID, he offered that free ritual and I joined, and it was like really powerful. At that point, my ancestors, that was my mother line's ancestor, was also the first line with whom I got engaged in and worked with and so forth. And since then, she was like all the time with me. Like, you're right now, let's dive into that, please. Let's need more. And I would, from there on, I started, I knew the course that Daniel offers always also today, several times in a year, ancestral and achieving course for self, to use it for yourself. And then I didn't have anything in the idea to become a professional practitioner or professional ritualist or something at that point, but it just somehow organically came to that.
Oh, that's wonderful. They just found you. They're like, you're at home right now anyway. It's COVID.
Exactly. Exactly. And I was at that point in a tiny town called Hildesheim. And the flatmates, they got in COVID. How was it called? COVID, where you couldn't leave your home.
Oh, like quarantine?
Yeah, COVID quarantine somewhere else. So I was all alone and not knowing anyone. And tiny town anyway. So I was literally for 3 months, and I'm someone who enjoys also being alone, like quote unquote alone, like in the nature and so forth. But that 3 months were really with no other humans, and my ancestors really used that time very well.
So they're keeping you company. They said it's good to be alone, but too much alone time is not good. So
exactly. So let's drink a cacao together.
Oh, I love that. Oh my God. So we're gonna talk about next, since we're dying with the divine, we're gonna talk about some food. So we found one of these lists that I love to find on the internet. So it's always the same. Dishes that'll make you fall in love with Georgian food.
Oh, Georgian food. Oh, yes. My God.
So you can tell me what the real deal is, because I read these sometimes and people are like, no, not that one. Okay. So the first one, and I'm so sorry too, I'm not going to be able to pronounce these properly. So I just forgive me in advance. I apologize.
Yeah, you are forgiven.
Okay. I'm not trying to butcher your language. We have, I'm going to try to announce this one. It's Khacharpuri.
Khacharpuri.
Okay. Ajaruli.
Oh, it's really good.
Okay, yes. And it's so funny. I've seen this before. I think I saw it on a TikTok or Instagram, and somebody was making this, and I was like, whatever that is, I need it in my mouth immediately. I need to keep that money.
Yeah. It's better than it looks. Believe me, it's better than it looks.
I don't know if it can be better than it looks. Because it looks
like imagine a fondue made with bread, like crunchy bread, and you can eat the table plate part as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And the plate is a crunchy bread.
So I saw somebody making this online, and I didn't know. So the other thing is, if anybody doesn't know, in Georgia the alphabet is different. It's not the Roman alphabet. Because I didn't know what country it's from, I'm stressed, right? I'm watching this video. I want to know where they make this, but I can't read it. Like, I can't even guess, because it's a completely different alphabet that I had never even seen before. I was like, I don't know this alphabet. Yeah. And then, so this must have happened like a year ago, because then a couple months ago, we did a episode with Seta, who is our friend of the show from Armenia, and I was like, that alphabet looks a little similar to the one I had seen. So then when I saw this picture, when I was reading this article, I was like, aha, I found you. I found you, delicious bread dish. So the way this is described, it says in the article, a molten canoe of carbohydrates and dairy. Who doesn't want to eat that unless you're allergic to dairy or lactose intolerant? But if you like cheese and deliciously, beautifully baked bread, you want to eat this thing. So there's eggs in it too, like a raw egg. And I'm like, that's fine. I'll eat a place. Butter, oh my God. Butter, cheese, bread, and eggs. Like, come on. What else do you want?
They will bring it in this bread canoe. And they will bring this cheese and the butter melts inside. And really the egg is raw, but you scramble it inside. So because the cheese is really hot, it's like cooked right away inside.
Oh, yeah. My God.
But you do eat yourself.
Yeah.
Oh. So that is one of the variations of the very like typical Georgian dish, khachapuri. Khachapuri means like cheese bread.
Okay.
Yeah. And this acharuli khachapuri, this canoe cheese bread, this kind is known in the western part where the Black Sea shore is. So we have a Black Sea shore along on the west, and there you get that. You get it, of course, also in Tbilisi, in the capital, and in the restaurants now everywhere. That's where it comes from.
Oh, all right. I want that so bad.
Yes. You have to come to Georgia.
I know. I'm telling you, the more I've read about Georgia this week, the more I'm like, I think I have to go to Georgia.
Yeah, it's like not just because I'm from there, but it's really and really also only for the food is amazing. It just is.
Oh, it looks so good. So then next we have this thing, and at first I was like, are these candles? I didn't know what it was. So in
my, I have it myself here.
Oh, really?
You want? Candles. They always, when my mother would bring it to Austria for a present, they would say like, "Oh, candles, thank you."
Yes, that's what it is. I was like, "Oh, it's a candle." I was so confused. I was like, "Why is this on this list that looks like a candle?" Like, you can't eat that.
This is my most favorite. This is my favorite for everything.
Okay, so it's called Churchella. Okay, there we go. Thank you so much. Okay, this is how they describe in the article. Lumpy, colorful confections, and they hang it, people hang them, this makes sense, in store windows. Because if I saw that in a store window, I'm going in. Because, like, I'm like, what? Apparently, it takes time to make its concentrated grape juice. And they pour it over a strand of walnuts. And then on the outside, it looks waxy. That's why we're saying it looks like a candle. But it's packed with protein and sugar. And apparently, the Georgian military used to take it along because it was a really good way. It's like almost like a protein bar, like to eat one. So they used to take them when they're going to war, you know, for the soldiers, like, hey, you guys need a snack in the middle of fighting people. Eat this thing. Yeah, that makes sense. Walnuts, grape juice. It's like, it's a pick me up. But now it's a lot of time it's served with coffee and something people just like eat on the go. That sounds really good. Okay, that's cool. So now we know it's not a candle, but it does look like a candle. It's very cool. Mm. It has different colors. It's very pretty. All right. So the next thing we got is Khinkali.
Khinkali?
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, it sounds so much better when you say it.
Close.
Yeah. These are soup dumplings. And these are like your typical. We've talked many a dumpling on this podcast. Whenever we're in Eastern Europe, Western Asia, we get a dumpling. I want to try them all. I want to have a dumpling sampler from every country of their different type of dumpling. And I'm sure they're all delicious. Okay, this one's going to be a hard one, but I'm going to attempt it. Here we go. A Japsang Dali.
Oh, yeah, that's really good.
Okay.
And you said it actually right.
Really?
A Japsang Dali, yeah. Yeah.
Yes, I got one. This is like, it's like a vegetable dish. It's a medley, it says here, a medley, oven roasted medley of firm eggplant and crisp bell peppers, lightly bound with fresh tomato puree and some chopped cilantro. Okay, this sounds, this is saying it's something that's a lot of times served at the end of summer. And it says it will clear out your sinuses. Oh, so I guess it's a little spice, a little.
It's
spicy.
Yeah,
that sounds good. Yeah, it says it'll clean out your sinuses, which sounds delicious. All right. Now, here we go. Everybody, this dish, you remember that rhyme? Beans are healthy for your heart. The more you eat, the more you fart. Mm. This is how this one sounds. This is Lobio. Okay. So this is like a kidney bean dish, and it's like, it comes out like a slow cooked kidney bean, so like in a stew kind of consistency,
right.
And it has fried onion, cilantro, vinegar, dried marigold, and chilies.
And they cook it often, or traditionally, it's called the cooked in clay pot.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I love that dish. It's one of my favorites as well, and it's best with Georgian cornbread, Mchadi. I wonder if that is also on your list, Mchadi.
Let's see. We have another bread called Lubani, but I think it's different.
Lubiani is like this cheese bread, but instead of cheese, there is this lobio, this bean thing inside.
Oh, okay. So that's our, okay. Yeah, no, we don't have the Georgian cornbread on here, but that also sounds delicious. All these foods sound like I'm getting hungry right now. So then we have another, this is another version of like a kebab. I think it's called, there's too many consonants that two together. Mizvadi?
Mizvadi, yep.
Okay. And this is like a kebab. Think of your regular kebab, but there's just some, one thing that they put on this kebab, it says, is a sour plum. Like sauce sometimes. That actually sounds really good. I would eat that. And they eat it. And the sour plum sauce can be poured over a lot of different things. They say like tomatoes, bread, fried chicken. That sounds actually really good. We have this other thing that also looks flaky. I don't know what. Kalapi. Yes. This is very. Another. You guys really like the colors because everything is very colorful.
Yeah, they're beautiful. Yeah, it's purple. You have purple kalapis.
Yes, purple, and yellow, orange, ones. Red.
Yeah.
I'm like, you guys really like, you're not just eating good food. You want it to be very exciting for the eyes, which I love. These are like, it's like you're like a fruit roll up, but probably way better. It's pureed fruit that's spread thinly onto the sheet and then sun dried. Okay, so it's like a natural fruit roll up.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Sounds delicious. And then we have, is this the last? Oh, two more. We have Karcho. Karcho?
Karcho.
Mm-hmm. Karcho. Okay. It's a comfort food. And it's like, it looks like a soup. There's, it has garlic. It has a called Melisseli, which is a like a blend, a Georgian spice blend. Cilantro. And you can put chicken or beef in it. Ooh, walnuts. Oh, yeah. You guys love them walnuts.
Yeah. And, yeah. A lot. A lot of walnuts. And cilantro.
Yeah, it's a lot of walnuts and cilantro, and I'm not mad at it. You can eat it with some bread on the side. Okay, that's nice. And the last one we got here is Pekali. Which is an elaborate vegetarian dish. It's like a vegetable pate, and it has whatever vegetables you got. Say you got beets, carrots, spinach are common, and it's served over a bread. You just boil the vegetables, you puree, you put some lemon sauce, again, some cilantro, some garlic, and some ground walnuts. I've had something like this before, and I'm not Georgian, but like something similar in a Persian. Oh, yeah. And they have pomegranate. I've had something like that in a Persian restaurant. And it's thick. I don't know if it's similar to this one, but it's thick. And it sounds like interesting, like the flavors together, but it's really good. And I couldn't eat it. It was really good. And I couldn't eat too much of it because I got really full. But I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, because of the walnuts, right?
Yeah. You get really full fast. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's delicious. So everybody, of course, as always, the link is in the show notes. So if you want to go and be like, what are you guys talking about? You can go and see and all these different foods. And then you can go to Georgia and eat them. So
that's the best place to eat them.
Exactly.
But I'd say all of this, what you just named from the list, they are really delicious.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. No lights.
Yes. It sounds so, so good. So
everybody,
that's what we're doing. Our next field trip in life is to Georgia. So next, I'm going to plug myself before we move on. So if you guys are enjoying the show, you can follow us on all the socials. We're on Instagram. We're on TikTok, Facebook, YouTube, and Threads. And if you really like the show, I really appreciate it if you give us a rating on Apple or Spotify. I really appreciate that. It helps the show a lot. It helps other people find us. If you feel so inclined, you can even give me a tip, a little money to support the show. I always appreciate that. And of course, if you have any suggestions for episodes, any questions, any comments, feel free to email me at dinewithadivinepod@gmail.com. Okay. Now, we're going to talk a little bit about Georgian culture. Now, there's a couple things. I'm all over the place with this, so everybody forgive me. Usually I'm a little more organized, but I couldn't figure out what I wanted to talk about. So we're just going to talk about a bunch of stuff.
That's very Georgian. So you were in the spirit.
Okay, good.
Very not organized. I really like that.
Good, because I was like, I don't know what I want to talk about. There's like so many different things that are so good. So once again, as I said in the beginning, I was on TikTok. And for some reason, TikTok keeps... Okay, I follow a lot of like... I used to do flamenco dancing. So I follow a lot of flamenco dancers. Then all of a sudden I see this other type of dancing and I'm like, just different countries. I see this dance where there's a bunch of women in a line. The women are dancing and it looks like they're gliding. Like you can't see their feet. So they're usually wearing really long dresses and their feet, I don't know what they're doing under there. So I'm looking there. What's going on? Women in a line and they're like walking in circles, like perfect circles of women. It's like conga line, but very organized. And they're making shapes like they're walking like an S and they're separating and they're going back. So I'm like, what the hell is this? This is months, guys. Months, like I've seen this. And again, I can't read Georgian. I don't know what country. And then finally, I'm looking in the comments trying to figure out where is this from? And somebody mentions the Caucasus Mountains. So I'm like, okay. So I'm Googling because I've forgotten where the Caucasus Mountains are. I was like, who are the Caucasus Mountains again? And then they start talking about somebody mentioned Georgia. And I was like, okay. So now I'm watching all these videos, right? Now I'm getting tons of just Georgian dancing. I'm like, And there's another one where these men are wearing like boots, but the boots look like ballet shoes a little bit, like tip shoes, and they're just leaping. They're just leaping through the air everywhere. And I don't know where they're going. They're wearing big green hats because I'm like, that makes sense. It's cold up there. And they're just leaping through the air. Like the way these people are jumping is impressive. They're so high. So I was like, I need to learn everything there is to learn about Georgian dancing. And then I was looking it up, and there are many different types of Georgian dancing. There are very specific reasons for the dance, and they have like stories behind each dance, which I thought was really cool. So I was going to talk a little bit about a couple of them. I won't go through the whole list, just a few. So we got Kartuli. This is a romantic dance or a wedding dance, and it's usually performed by a couple. And during the dance, the man is not supposed to touch the woman, and they're supposed to be a certain distance away from each other. And usually it's the woman moving around the man, which is pretty interesting. Also, there's tons of like Georgian dance groups that like show all these different dances. You can find a lot of it on YouTube. It's very neat. There's Korumi, which is a war dance. And this is usually performed by mostly men. And it's supposed to demonstrate different themes about war and celebrating and victories and glories, but also like the hardship of war, which is really interesting. So they have specific rhythms they use, even specific dance beats and specific like instruments, bagpipes and drums that they usually use during these dances. Then they have Juruli, which is like what we were talking about, the bread before, but not the bread. This is a dance. But it comes from Ajura, which is where it gets its name. And they usually have really colorful costumes during these dances. And they usually have soft, graceful movements. And they're like, usually it's a men and women, and they're like being a little flirty and like fun during the dance. But it's supposed to be a little bit more fun and lighthearted and just fun. They have Partsa is a fast-paced, rhythmic, colorful dance. And it's very fast, but it's also graceful. Then we have the Kazbergruli, which is a dance that comes from the mountains. And it is cold up there, so the dance actually shows you how about the landscape of the time. So it's the movements are very strong and stiff because it's cold, and they're talking about the mountains. It all of this is performance art, obviously, but it's just so neat how every single dance is showing you. It's like watching a movie. It's every dance isn't just like a dance. It's telling like a story. And they come from the different regions, and they're explaining what those people experience, which is, or like situations, like I said, some of them were about marriage and like fun and like being flirty, and some of them are about war. So it's really neat. Then we have, there's so many more, but I'm just going to read one or two more. We have Kopari Kalba, which is from northeastern Georgia, which is the area we're going to talk about in a minute also. And usually it enters like a woman who's looking for her beloved. And then the beloved enters from like the other side. But he enters like, ha ha, I'm here. Oh, no. So it's usually a man and a woman.
She's a jumping in. And
yeah, he's like, I've come. But then she's like, like, so it's very exciting. I'm really excited. And usually the costumes too. The men, a lot of, and it depends on the dance, but a lot of the time these men are wearing these big hats, big furry hats, and these women are also wearing headdresses. And in this particular dance, the woman, when she decides to throw down her, so it's like the men around start like play fighting, and when she puts her headdress down, everybody's got to stop because she has announced that the dance is over, which is neat. And there's some other like war kind of dances. And then I'm going to go back to the dance for the, now you said it before, what is the region that you were doing a lot of your research with the?
Yeah, that is in the northeastern area, Khevsureti.
Yes.
South Khevsureti. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So They have a dance too, and this is a dance that unites love, courage, respect for women, toughness, competition, skill, beauty, and colorfulness all in one performance. It starts out with a couple being a little flirty, and then another dude appears, and then this other. So it's usually,
yeah.
Okay. So, okay. Yeah. So now it's usually men and women. So it's usually a woman. She's there. She's like all cute and be like, oh my God. And then a guy comes out and he's like, oh my God, you're so cute. And she's like, oh my God, you're cute. And then another dude comes and he's like, but wait, I think you're cute too. And now what's she going to do? There's two dudes and she doesn't know what to do. Yeah. So then the men start to fight. And this is a dance, guys. This isn't a play. This is a dance. So, like, the men start to fight. And then the woman, she puts her veil down and she's like, everybody stop fighting. I'm gonna leave because now I'm pissed off. You guys didn't need to fight. Like, I just wanted to be flirty. So then they leave. And then the other men, they attack each other. They keep fighting. And at the end, the woman comes and she stops the fight again. And once she stops the fight the second time, it means that the dance is over. But you never get to know who won. It's interesting. It's very cool. And apparently it's very technical and requires intense practice and the utmost skill in order to perform the dance without hurting anybody. Because remember, this is a play fight. They're not really fighting, but they're supposed to show that they're fighting because it's part of the performance. And you don't actually want to cut somebody's hand off. You just want to pretend you did because it's supposed to be fun. So there's a lot of these really interesting. Oh, and this is the last one I'll mention because it's very neat. Actually, sorry, I have to mention two more. This is the second last one. This is another mountain dance. It's called Mituluri. And this is similar to our previous one we were just talking about, but this one's based in competition the same way. But in this dance, it's between two groups of young men. So they'll pretend to fight also, and they'll also do tricks. It's basically a dance battle between two groups of dudes. Who can be the coolest? And a lot of it has a really cool finale. And a lot of these are festivals, used to happen at festivals they used to have in the highlands, in the mountains. And it's supposed to just be fun for everybody to watch. And then people get to say, oh, who won? So it's a good time. And then the last one is another one that I saw on Instagram. It's Samid and Khonga, which are awesome. These costumes they have really long sleeves for the men and the women. There's wedding dances and there's demi point. This is what I've seen. Oh, yeah. It's where they're completely on the balls of their feet. This is what I had seen on Instagram. And it must take years to really learn how to perfect this because these people look like they're gliding. They don't look like they're walking. It's very cool. All right. So that's my obsession with Georgian folk dancing.
You described them very well.
Thank you.
People are seeing it. Yeah.
I was like, this is amazing. So now we're going to go back to talking about the area that I know Anna has done a lot of research in. So this is an area, it's like northeastern Georgia. So it's up in the mountains. And I know from reading some of your research and reading about it other places, they were saying that this area, because of where they were, they got to retain a little bit of their practices for longer, right? Because, like, it was more hard to get to.
Right.
Yes. So they still have some of their, like, even, like, pre-Christian practices that they also have. Just like your neighbor to the south, Armenia, Georgian Christianity started in the 4th century. So they have a long history of Christianity, but up in these mountains, because it was hard for people to get there, they retained some of the culture. It's like, if you look at the pictures of these areas, it's gorgeous. Think like how people talk about the Alps and people talk about these other mountain ranges. I never knew, and I don't know why nobody told me, but I never knew the Caucasus Mountains were so beautiful. My God, like, it is gorgeous. I don't know why they're not out here making more postcards. It makes me want to go there. It's
beautiful. Yeah, they're very beautiful and incredible feeling to be there. And it's like also just the region of Khevsureti. So there is also Tushethi, another region more far to the east, which is also beautiful, miraculous. And only Khevsureti as well is, you can go to the, let's say, from the side from Tbilisi, from the capital, you call it the other side. So there is the highest point where you drive over the pass. Mm-hmm. And from this side, you call it the other side. And the other side looks very different than, let's say, this side. And so, depending on in which gorge you are, the landscape again changes. It's like also amazing how the landscapes change and beautiful, yeah, in cliffs and in rocks. But it's a very harsh nature. Like, mm-hmm. It's very harsh. And you can also feel like the cultural, or let's go back to that, what you were sharing right now with the, and that's true. Khevsureti has been one of the regions, with others as well, also Svaneti, another mountain region. But these mountain regions, and especially Khevsureti, have kept a lot of knowledge the most of the time, like the most from the others, because of their being very far in this mountains, and it was hard to reach there. As Georgia became officially a Christian country, I think it was officially the second. The first one was Armenia, officially, something. And then the second was in Georgia. Mm-hmm. And there has been a huge, like, Christian imperialization, cultural one as well. They're forceful on the people who were worshipping local deity. Mm-hmm. But there they couldn't touch the mountain. Mm-hmm. There, only the Queen Tamar, there was like one a time, there a big, she's called the King Tamar, but she was ruling herself, though she was not the wife of a king, so that's why they call her the King Tamar. Mm-hmm. And she was the only one who went in, and she has not the best reputation, like also today you get that some don't really like much like her, even though she's also revered as well. So the first ones really who were able to touch that culture was the Russian Imperia. Mm-hmm. And so we became, at the end of the 18th century, officially Georgia had signed, at the time it was an attempt of becoming, that Russia was just becoming a patron of Georgia. They had to protect Georgia, but instead of protecting Georgia, they started to colonize regions slowly, one after another. And there were long attempts to do that in Khevsureti as well, and it was the hardest there because they are also from mentality and from the character, they're not the most, how to say, they won't obey so easily. They're really warriors and like very independent thinkers and beers, that they're also very devoted to their local traditions. That's so important to them. You feel that even today. And so because of this history, so only after that the Russian Imperia touched it, but also it remained it for still many pre-Christian customs. And then in the Soviet era, the Soviets just displaced many of them from the mountain regions because they had this very strong identity with their land. And still they have a lot of knowledge kept, which is super precious. And it was only until the 70s and 80s and 90s of the 20th century that many of these professions, like this Kadagi, what I was researching about. So the Kadagi, let me explain who these people were. They were like they would call them the tongues of the god, because they would voice that what the deities, the local deities, wanted to have been noticed to the village. Mm-hmm. And they would be the mediators between the human community and the deities. So they were very important people, and this was really a profession. And that went along until the 70s. After that, it starts to come into extinction, and today there are no Kadagins anymore. Mm-hmm. But there were many such professions. There were also mesultanes. Mesultanes were also mediums, but they would be the kind of a bit more like psychopomp / medium. People would go there for individual souls, would go there, or some individual ancestors, and share talk with, they were women, Mesultanas were mostly women. They would talk with her and tell her what they wanted their family to know, or family members would come to her and ask about a certain disease. But the Mesultana was specifically for human disease, and so Kadagi's role was to be the medium of deities. So that was the difference. And there were many such, there were many professions, all with their very distinct function. And and that's one of the characterization of the of this community, the Hatsurs. They had many very specific ways of how things needed to be tended. So many festivities and the rituals and the songs and a lot of ancestral reverence, festivities and days, and exactly how it was going. There were many lamenters, professional lamenters, and different ones even. So there would be several professional lamenters who had different functions.
Yes, I was actually reading about, and thank you for going over that, because I was just going to read from your website. I'm glad that we can hear it from you. But one of the things I saw that was about the professional lamenters, and I put that in the show notes, everybody, so you guys can read it too. But I thought that was interesting that it's like, these are people who are literally, their job is to just like mourn. And you do see that in a couple different cultures. I just found out this actually the other day. This happens, and I know in Mexican culture in some areas, in Chinese culture in some areas, but there are these people who are literally, that is their job for the community, is to mourn other people. And I'm just trying to get to the link that I put in the show notes for us, so I can tell you better, from Anna's website, which is where I got it. Oh, here we go. They're called Greeny. Is that how you would say it? Or no, sorry, that's the song that they sing, right?
The green one, that is a specific sky thing song. That is yet another thing. The lamenting voice is, I translated it naming laments in voice. That's a specific way of mourning.
Okay.
In poetry and song.
Yes.
They would not just like cry over the person, but their job was to impromptu at that moment in the ritual setting to start poetically voicing through music and song the mourning.
So, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and I love how you talk about too, like that they, how they like, okay, first of all, you have to be talented to do this job, because if you don't just like, you're not just like, oh, it's so sad. No, you have to talk about the person and like why it's so sad and like who they were and this kind of thing. It's almost like being a, what do they call it? Like a bard or like a singer. But you're making songs about the person and you're helping everybody remember, right? This person. And you're talking about like, oh my God, you're not just saying it's sad. They're having people, like this person's going over the family house while everybody's maybe having a meal and talking about the person. And they're like, oh my gosh, like Matthew was such a good dude. And remember that time that he did this and blah, blah, blah. And now this is why we love him. And he was good at his job. Like, they are just singing about the person. This is not an easy job. Like, you have to have some good talent. And this is usually done by a group of men. And go ahead.
That you're mixing it up perhaps with the green one. The green one.
Oh, yeah, I think I am. I'm sorry. Men. Okay.
But this one, like, this was all the lamenting voice were women, female.
Oh, okay. I apologize. Yeah. So all of these jobs are a lot. And I love how they have all these specific jobs in the community for these people. And another thing that I had read earlier about this specific group that we were talking about in the mountain is a lot of the time throughout history, a lot of the Georgian kings and queens, the royalty, would hire bodyguards and people from this region because they were known to be like the tough, really tough people because they're from the mountains, like you said, where it's not an easy area to live. So they were used to the roughness of the landscape. So they were really good at fighting. Plus, this is another kind of world concept with that I love. A lot of times when people are from mountainous areas, they have to be good at mapping things out because they have to walk up and down the mountains all the damn time. They know where everything is. So a lot of these people were really good at fighting because also they knew where they could hide. They knew the mountains better than other people because they lived there. So these people were just really interesting, and I'm glad we got a chance to talk about them. And thank you for explaining about the Kadagis, and this is a very interesting concept. Their whole culture is very
cool. Thank you for being interested.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's very cool. Yeah. Now we're going to talk about our story time today. Today, our story is a Georgian folktale. I read a few of them. There is a link in the show notes. I think it's like a website where there's like books that are out of print and they're free. So if you want to read a couple Georgian folktales, there's a bunch of good ones. I read one that was really long and then I read one that was shorter. And I was like, I don't know. They're both really good, but I think I'm going to read the shorter one. It's called The Prince. So if you click on the link and you want to read it, it's called The Prince. It's a really good story. It's really interesting. We love a folktale. So instead, we're going to read The Servant and the Peasant folktale. Again, this is a Georgian folktale.
I love that one. Okay, good.
I'm glad you like it. Okay, good. Oh, I'm so happy you picked that.
Yeah, I have that also on my, I translated it as the one on my blog.
Oh, really? Oh, good.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
You're cruel. Going for achieving that.
Nice. Oh, I'm so happy now. Okay. I was so nervous because I was like, oh, I want to tell this other story, but it's so long and I know I'm going to mess it up. So no. Mm-hmm. And I also had to pick a story where I could pronounce everybody's name. Like, so this one doesn't have specific names, so we're good. Okay, we're going to tell the story. This is The Servant and the Peasant. Once upon a time, there was a king and everything was fine. He was great. Everything was fine. So then he started having dreams. So he had a real weird dream. So he woke in his dream. There was a fox and the fox was suspended from the ceiling by its tail. So when he woke up, he didn't know what the dream meant. And he was worried because he's like, that was weird. So he assembled all his the top people in the kingdom. And he's like, you guys, what is going on? I had this weird dream. And they're like, oh, we don't know. We don't know. So he's like, okay. This is what we're going to do. Call everybody in the kingdom together because somebody's going to be able to figure this out. So they call everybody. And on the third day, everybody came to the palace. And among the people who were there was one peasant guy. So now the peasant guy on his way to the palace, after he heard that everybody was going there, he had been traveling around along a path. And now on both sides of the path, there was mountains. But when he got closer to the mountains, there was a serpent lying in the middle of the road and stretching its neck and putting its tongue out. When the peasant went near, the serpent said, good day, where are you going, peasant? And the peasant was like, oh, I'm going to the king, because he called everybody. And the serpent's like, okay, no problem. Let me help you out here. I'm going to tell you what you need to tell the king. And the peasant was like, what? This is awesome. It's like, great. I'm going to be the one to tell the king this news. And he said, okay, no problem. I'm going to tell the king what you told me, and I'll bring you half of the riches that whatever the king gives me, like the present for me telling him what's happening in his dream. And the serpent's like, okay, cool. So I'll divide it up and half will be mine and half will be yours. And just tell the king this. The fox means that the kingdom is the dream about the fox, it means that in the kingdom, there's cunning, hypocrisy, and treachery. So the peasant was like, okay, I'll keep this in mind. So he goes to the king, he tells the king, and he's like, this is what he doesn't tell him what that the serpent told him, but he says, this is what your dream means. So the king was so happy and he gave him a whole bunch of gifts. So now the peasant was like, actually, now that I got all these gifts, I really don't want to share it with the serpent. Huh, that's not cool, but okay. So he's like, I'm going to go a different way. Yeah. Kind of. So he went a different way so that he didn't pass the serpent again. So now some time passes and the king has another dream. So in this dream, a sword, like a sword without a sheath on it, is hanging suspended from the roof. And the king then again calls the peasant and he says, come, I had a dream. What do you think this dream means? And the peasant was like, I don't know. And he's like, actually, king, if you give me a day or two, I'll be able to figure it out. And the king's like, okay, fine. So what does the peasant do with his petty self? He goes back to the footpath where he saw the serpent. Okay. So disrespectful. So he goes back and he's like, serpent, where are you? And the serpent comes out and the serpent's like, what do you want? What's the problem? And then the peasant's like, I got a problem. The king needs me to help him again. And the serpent was like, all right, go tell the king. So the peasant tells the serpent what happened about the dream. So the serpent's like, go tell the king that the naked sword means that there's war coming and that the enemies are in and out. So he has to prepare for battle. There's people in the kingdom planning against him and outside. So go tell him to prepare for battle. So after he heard that, he thanked the serpent and he left. So he went to the king and he told the king. And he said, oh, king, this is what the sword means. So the king was super happy. He's like, oh, my God, thank you so much. And he gave him more gifts. Now the peasant went back to where the serpent was. And because he went the same path. Maybe he was tired this time. He didn't want to go a different path. So he went back on the same path. And the serpent's like, oh, now that you're here, can we chat about how you didn't give me my money last time? And can you give me some money? So then he got super mad, the peasant. He's like, I'm not giving you any of my money. I'm going to give you a black stone and burning cinder. And he takes out his sword and chases the serpent. The serpent tries to go into a hole, but as the serpent's slithering in, he cuts off part of his tail. So whatever. So now he's going home. We'll talk about the disrespect in a minute. So he goes back home, right? And once again, some time passes and the king has another dream. So this time the king sees a slain sheep that's hanging from the roof. And the king asks the peasant, what do you think is going on? And once again, the peasant doesn't know because it's not him, right? It's the serpent. So now he's like, oh, shit. It's like, number one, I don't know what's going on. Number two, the only person who does know what's going on, I tried to kill him. No good for me. All right. So the peasant's like, I'm going to have to swallow my pride and try and go back to that footpath and find that snake. So he goes back to the footpath and he gets there and he's like, serpent, can you come here? I need to talk to you, please. And here comes the serpent and the peasant tells the serpent what the problem is. And the serpent said, if you give me half of what the king gives you, I'll tell you. Okay. This is what our agreement was every single time, but you keep seeming not to understand. This time,
how generous of the serpent. Again, it's the third time, the very chill serpent.
Anna, this is the nicest serpent I've ever seen in my life. Because
if it was... Oh, they are good folks. Yeah.
Because if it was me, I'm not coming out when this guy is calling my name. I'm locking my door. So the serpent is like, okay, this time you have to give me half your stuff. And he's like, the peasant is like, I promise. Now the serpent says, this is a sign that there's peace everywhere and the people have become quiet and gentle like sheep. This peasant is like, oh my God, thank you so much. He goes back on his way. When the peasant comes to the king, he tells the king what the serpent told him. The king was so, so happy. And he gave him more gifts this time than he ever gave him. The peasant returns and he goes to where the serpent's waiting. And the serpent came out and they divided everything up. And the peasant was like, here's half your stuff. By the way, you've been really good to me and I'm going to predict you. So sorry about that. And he's like, I'm going to give you everything that you're meant to get. Here you go. And the peasant is like apologizing profusely for how he acted. And the serpent says, you know what? Don't even worry. Don't even worry about it. It's not your fault. The first time when the people were being deceitful, and I told you there was treachery and hypocrisy in the land, you too were being deceitful and you were being a hypocrite. And despite your promise, you left and you went the other way and tried to avoid me. The second time when there was war everywhere and there was quarrels and there was issues, you too fought me. You cut off half my tail. Don't forget how rude you were to me. And he said, but now when peace and love has fallen all through the land, you brought me gifts and you shared with me. And then the peasant said, go, my brother, may the peace of God rest with thee. And I don't even want any wealth. And the serpent went away and cast itself into the hole. He was basically just saying that the guy was a reflection of what was going on in the kingdom. And the serpent forgave him. And we all love the serpent because he was teaching lessons. And the guy is a better person now. Yay.
Yeah, and I love this one because it shows so much about how much, how to say, we are not only individuals, but yes, we are like part of this collective and of this plan. We could also, I would like to say, from astrological terms, when there are transits and Pluto is going over,
yes,
transit collectively, things are happening, like the Pluto Saturn transits, COVID happened, like things are collective, and that's a kind of the message that I'm reading through this folk tale.
Yes,
and I so appreciate that you chose this one.
Ah,
funny.
Yeah, I'm so happy that you like it and that you knew it. That's awesome, because I was nervous.
I can give you also the link if you want from the Well, never mind.
I'll go on your blog and I'll find it and I'll put it in the show notes for everybody to read the story. Yeah, it's a really nice story. And that is a good point. I didn't even get that. I was just like, damn, this is a nice serpent. But like, I didn't even get that from the story. And that is such a good point. Like, it, we're all part of this community collective. And also, it shows you how this guy was treating one person. So as a collective, when we are better to each other, were better to people individually too, right? Like when there was peace in the land, the guy decided to not be an asshole anymore. And he decided to actually share with the serpent who was the reason that he had all the good stuff that he had. Let's be better to each other, everybody. That's the second thing you can take from this story. Thank you, Anna. That comes to the end of our show. So
thank you, Ashley. Thank you so much.
Of course. Just let us know, Anna, if there's on the internet where we can find you. I know I have links to everything, but if you want to announce, you can take time to announce anything you want to announce.
I have my website, shibianta.com, where I am offering my ancestral lineage healing practices. And there I have also a blog where lately I'm blogging about this indigenous Georgian custom. My last blog was about flying shrines, pre-Christian Georgian shrines that had this character, one of the characters that they would change form and shapeshift and then fly to other places. Yeah. So yeah, I'm blogging there and offering things. So that is one of the things where you can find me, and I have a Patreon. You can, link that as well, where I sing. I have also an animist singing project, we are, the way we approach singing is that singing is a co-singing, even if there is not another human, which sometimes is. I sing often also. I love to sing with other humans, but also with trees or my ancestors. And so it's a co-creational act. That's our Patreon. Yeah,
I love that. Oh, that's so cool. And like I said, everything, all of Anna's links will be in our show notes. So if you want to check out her Patreon, you want to check out her blog, which is very informative. Half the information I told you today I got from her blog. She's like, does really good research. So I mean, if you want to learn more, please go there. It's really interesting. And yeah, everything, like I said, will be in the show notes. You can check out all of her offerings. So everybody, thank you so much. And thank you again, Anna, for listening to me stumble through that story. And I'm so glad that that's a story that you're familiar with.
Everybody, he told it very well, and the dances. Yeah.
I'm obsessed. I'm probably gonna today now take another hour going on like TikTok looking at like Georgian traditional dances. Oh my gosh, I love it. And oh, I also put a link in the show notes, something I didn't mention before, but if everybody, I love polyphonic singing. I know some people may not know what it is, but Georgia is famous for being one of the countries that kind of like invented polyphonic singing, which is so cool. I didn't know that.
Yes.
Oh. So I found a trio. There's like three girls, women, I believe, that they're like on YouTube. And I put a link there too. So if you don't know what polyphonic singing is, these three women from Georgia, they have a group and you can watch them. And you'll see the polyphonic singing. This one is three women and they're doing different sounds. I'm not a music major, so I know I'm not describing it right. But you guys know what I'm talking about. Like, they do different sounds or different like pitches with their voice. It's very beautiful. They're singing songs in Georgian, so it's really cool.
Actually, please put also Hamlet Gonashvili. I can send you the link. Like, he's a treasure. Like, his voice is just amazing. As they put the satellite into the cosmos, like many collected songs from the Earth, one of them was a Georgian song sung by Hamlet, which is just like heavenly when you listen to it. It's just amazing. I send you the link and then you can also share that.
Yes, I will share it. I'll put it in the show notes. Perfect. Cool. Oh my God. It's, and the thing that's so beautiful about music in general, not just Georgian music, but you don't need to know people are singing to feel something. Like when I was watching, I love polyphonic singing. I just love it. There's this Polish group that I always listen to. They do polyphonic singing. But when I was listening to these three women sing, you just feel like, I just felt warm. I felt good. And they're just like walking through their town. This one girl has her donkey. It's very cute. It's very sweet. And you just feel good. I was like, oh, this is so cool. Like, it's really, and obviously they could be singing about anything. And there's another group I listen to, and sometimes they have a whole album of like funeral songs. But even then, I don't know what they're saying, but you feel it. And that's the whole point of music, right? Like, it's for you to feel something. I'm going to put this Hamlet, you said, is the man's name.
Hamlet, yeah.
Okay. I will put his stuff in the show notes too, so you can all feel what we feel. It's really cool. All this, the other music is amazing. And this is the whole reason I do this podcast, is so that we can all introduce each other to our cultures. If there's one thing, is like, that's why I love doing this, is because I love learning about all, like, about Georgia has been such a delight. You never know that this tiny country in the Caucasus Mountains, this tiny country that I knew barely anything about, I'm like open to this like whole other world of culture. And I'm like, I'm so happy that like I learned something about this. You know what I mean? Like, this is just now, my worldview is now expanded too. I hope this happens for everybody. I hope you guys listening to Anna explain stuff and like just see how like cool the world is. Like, it's just awesome. Oh, I just love
it. Thank you so much, Ashley. Thank you.
You're so
very appreciated. And my ancestors are happy that you guys are celebrating our culture.
That's so cool. Yeah, thank you. And his ancestors are appreciated. Like I said, so this is the end of the show, everybody. This is Dine with the Divine. Thank you so much for listening. We're on all your favorite socials. You can find Dine with the Divine anywhere you listen to your podcast. And if you want to follow me, Ashley, I'm at SankofaHS on Instagram and most handles. And that's Sankofa Healing Sanctuary on Facebook. Thank you so much, everybody. We will see you all next week. Thank you. Bye.
Bye, everyone.